The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Part 4 of the Yoga of Self-Perfection, the second half of Chapter 9, The Liberation of the Spirit, page 686. Sattva produces a higher type. The gifts of sattva are the mind of reason and balance, clarity of the disinterested, truth-seeking, open intelligence, a will subordinated to the reason or guided by the ethical spirit, self-control, equality, calm, love, sympathy, refinement, measure, fineness of the aesthetic and emotional mind, in the sensational being, delicacy, just acceptivity, moderation and poise, a vitality subdued and governed by the mastering intelligence. The accomplished types of the sattvic man are the philosopher, saint, and sage. Of the rajasic man, the statesman, warrior, forceful man of action. But in all men there is, in greater or lesser proportions, a mingling of the gunas, a multiple personality, and in most a good deal of shifting and alternation from the predominance of one to the prevalence of another guna. Even in the governing form of their nature, most human beings are of a mixed type. All the color and variety of life is made of the intricate pattern of the weaving of the gunas. But richness of life, even a sattvic harmony of mind and nature, does not constitute spiritual perfection. There is a relative possible perfection, but it is a perfection of incompleteness, some partial height, force, beauty, some measure of nobility and greatness, some imposed and precariously sustained balance. There is a relative mastery, but it is a mastery of the body by life, or of the life by mind, not a free possession of the instruments by the liberated and self-possessing spirit. The gunas have to be transcended if we would arrive at spiritual perfection. Tamas evidently has to be overcome. Inertia and ignorance and incapacity cannot be elements of a true perfection. But it can only be overcome in nature by the force of rajas, aided by an increasing force of sattva. Rajas has to be overcome. Egoism, personal desire, and self-seeking passion are not elements of the true perfection. But it can only be overcome by force of sattva, enlightening the being, and force of tamas, limiting the action. Sattva itself does not give the highest or the integral perfection. Sattva is always a quality of the limited nature. Sattvic knowledge is the light of a limited mentality. Sattvic will is the government of a limited intelligent force. Moreover, sattva cannot act by itself in nature, but has to rely for all action on the aid of rajas, so that even sattvic action is always liable to the imperfections of rajas, egoism, perplexity, inconsistency, a one-sided turn, a limited and exaggerated will, exaggerating itself in the intensity of its limitations, pursue the mind and action even of the saint, philosopher, and sage. There is a sattvic as well as a rajasic or tamasic egoism, at the highest an egoism of knowledge or virtue, but the mind's egoism, of whatever type, is incompatible with liberation. All the three gunas have to be transcended. Sattva may bring us near to the light, but its limited clarity falls away from us when we enter into the luminous body of the divine nature. This transcendence is usually sought by a withdrawal from the action of the lower nature. That withdrawal brings with it a stressing of the tendency to inaction. Sattva, when it wishes to intensify itself, seeks to get rid of rajas and calls in the aid of the tamasic principle of inaction. That is the reason why a certain type of highly sattvic men live intensely in the inward being, but hardly at all in the outward life of action, or else are there incompetent and ineffective. The seeker of liberation goes farther in this direction, strives by imposing an enlightened tamas on his natural being, a tamas which by this saving enlightenment is more of a quiescence than an incapacity. To give the sattvic guna freedom to lose itself in the light of the spirit, a quietude and stillness is imposed on the body, on the active life soul of desire and ego, on the external mind, while the sattvic nature, by stress of meditation, by an exclusive concentration of adoration, by a will turned inward to the Supreme, strives to merge itself in the spirit. But if this is sufficient for a quietistic release, it is not sufficient for the freedom of an integral perfection. This liberation depends upon inaction and is not entirely self-existent and absolute. The moment the soul turns to action, it finds that the activity of the nature is still the old, imperfect motion. There is a liberation of the soul from the nature which is gained by inaction, but not a liberation of the soul in nature perfect and self-existent, whether in action or in inaction. The question then arises whether such a liberation and perfection are possible, and what may be the condition of this perfect freedom. The ordinary idea is that it is not possible, because all action is of the lower gunas, necessarily defective, sadosham, caused by the motion, inequality, want of balance, unstable strife of the gunas. But when these unequal gunas fall into perfect equilibrium, all action of nature ceases, and the soul rests in its quietude. The divine being, we may say, may either exist in his silence or act in nature through her instrumentation, but in that case must put on the appearance of her strife and imperfection. That may be true of the ordinary deputed action of the divine in the human spirit, with its present relations of soul to nature in an embodied imperfect mental being. But it is not true of the divine nature of perfection. The strife of the gunas is only a representation in the imperfection of the lower nature. What the three gunas stand for are three essential powers of the divine, which are not merely existent in a perfect equilibrium of quietude, but unified in a perfect consensus of divine action. Tamas, in the spiritual being, becomes a divine calm, which is not an inertia and incapacity of action, but a perfect power, shakti, holding in itself all its capacity, and capable of controlling and subjecting to the law of calm even the most stupendous and enormous activity. Rajas becomes a self-effecting initiated sheer will of the spirit, which is not desire, endeavor, striving passion, but the same perfect power of being, shakti, capable of an infinite, imperturbable and blissful action. Sattva becomes not the modified mental light, prakasha, but the self-existent light of the divine being, jyoti, which is the soul of the perfect power of being and illumines in their unity the divine quietude and the divine will of action. The ordinary liberation gets the still divine light in the divine quietude, but the integral perfection will aim at this greater triune unity. When this liberation of the nature comes, there is a liberation also of all the spiritual sense of the dualities of nature. In the lower nature, the dualities are the inevitable effect of the play of the gunas on the soul affected by the formations of the sattvic, rajasic, and tamasic ego. The knot of this duality is an ignorance which is unable to seize on the spiritual truth of things and concentrates on the imperfect appearances, but meets them not with mastery of their inner truth, but with a strife and a shifting balance of attraction and repulsion, capacity and incapacity, liking and disliking, pleasure and pain, joy and sorrow, acceptance and repugnance. All life is represented to us as a tangle of these things, of the pleasant and the unpleasant, the beautiful and the unbeautiful, truth and falsehood, fortune, misfortune, success and failure, good and evil, the inextricable double web of nature. Attachments to its liking and repugnances keeps the soul bound in this web of good and evil, joys and sorrows. The seeker of liberation gets rid of attachment, throws away from his soul the dualities. But as the dualities appear to be the whole act, stuff, and frame of life, this release would seem to be most easily compassed by a withdrawal from life. Whether a physical withdrawal, so far as that is possible while in the body, or an inner retirement, a refusal of sanction, a liberating distaste, vairagya, for the whole action of nature. There is a separation of the soul from nature. Then the soul watches, seated above and unmoved, udashina, the strife of the gunas in the natural being, and regards as an impassive witness the pleasure and pain of the mind and body. Or it is able to impose its indifference even on the outer mind and watches with the impartial calm or the impartial joy of the detached spectator, the universal action in which it has no longer an active inner participation. The end of this movement is the rejection of birth and a departure into the silent self, moksha. But this rejection is not the last possible word of liberation. The integral liberation comes when this passion for release, mumukshutva, founded on distaste or vairagya, is itself transcended. The soul is then liberated both from attachment to the lower action of nature and from all repugnance to the cosmic action of the divine. This liberation gets its completeness when the spiritual gnosis can act with the supramental knowledge and reception of the action of nature and a supramental luminous will in initiation. The gnosis discovers the spiritual sense in nature, God in things, the soul of good in all things that have the contrary appearance. That soul is delivered in them and out of them. The perversions of the imperfect or contrary forms fall away, or are transformed into their higher divine truth, even as the gunas go back to their divine principles. And the spirit lives in a universal, infinite, and absolute truth, good, beauty, bliss, which is the supramental or ideal divine nature. The liberation of the nature becomes one with the liberation of the spirit, and there is founded in the integral freedom, the integral perfection. End of chapter 9, page 690.